So this morning we get to hear again from our senior Dharma teacher, Diane Fitzgerald, who perhaps at this point needs no introduction, but I introduce you anyway.
Thank you. So for these past 2+ weeks, we've been exploring Dogen's 4 methods of bodhisattva guidance. And now we are on part 4, identity action. And so I asked Steve if we could just read the first paragraph of this section because we're just starting. And so this week, I have been sitting as the Buddha who has a cold. And everyone sitting near me has been sitting as the Buddha who is sitting near a Buddha who has a cold. And so this Buddha is one with Buddha. This cold is one with cold. This Buddha is one with cold. So, identity action, all explained.
So let's have our...
And when we read this passage from Dogen, we might think that he's trying to express something that's very complicated. And I feel like he's just such a master of using what we call mind against mind. So using our thoughts against our thoughts, words against words. Because when I first read this passage, I go, what? You know, lute and wine and song, you know, what? And so maybe in that brief interlude of what, there's some space for something else to appear. And I actually think he's trying to express something very simple and something that is available to everyone. So not just Zen practitioners, but everyone in their life has intimations of oneness, of coughing, of dropping away of the self. So it's going to be like this, so get used to it. So the sunset, the cry of the newborn baby, the clam chowder we're eating on the rocks at the beach. You know, just that moment, it kind of catches us. And I find it interesting how we respond to that sometimes. So sometimes the response is to really back away from it. Like, whoa, that sort of groundlessness can make us nervous. Can make the mind feel like, whoa, you're losing control here, you know? And the other response often is a grasping one that, wow, you know, let's figure out how to do this again. Strategizing, you know? And I think it's particularly insidious when it happens in the Zendo. So we hear the sound of the bell, gong, just the bell. But for that instant, there's no us, just the bell, gong. And so we start figuring out how can we be the bell forever, you know? It's so silly because, you know, as though we could come up with some method for tasting water, you know? And so I think I asked Steve to read the passage from, or have us all read the passage from Genjo Koan, because Dogen, in another one of his great works, talks about when the self comes forward to practice enlightenment, you know, comes forward to the many things, that is delusion. But when the many things come to the self and practice enlightenment, that is enlightenment. So I think in this passage and then in the Genjo Koa, he's trying to, you know, help us develop an orientation toward receiving that which the world is constantly providing to us, and which we actually know because we all have these experiences from the time we're little children. We actually know this. And yet somehow, you know, the onion with the many layers, you know, just grows up all around it. And then we come up with all our ways of avoiding it or grasping it. And so then we're once again presenting this, and the mind goes, so what do I do? What do I do? You know, already jumping in there. And I think the one just truly wonderful gift of all the teachers is the practice of Zazen. And this is where we can turn, and we can think that we are practicing Zazen, but as Dogen would say, Zazen is practicing Zazen. Zazen is one with Zazen. Thank you.
Thank you. So now we'll do our Dharma dialogue. Yeah. And, so this is a time for us to talk with each other about practice, about your talk, about identity action, and you can make yourselves comfortable, and we'll go around and say our names. I'm Melissa.
Steve.
I'm Pete.
Abraham.
Jeannie.
David.
Diane.
So I want to thank Diane for her talk. It's always good to be reminded that Zazen is doing Zazen. I always forget. I really appreciate the reminder. It kind of hits me like a splash of water, and I go, oh, thank God.
Yeah, we don't really have to do anything.
Exactly. And the other thing I wanted to share is that last night I had this dream that it was sometime in the 1800s, and I was someplace in the West. I was a man who had been fighting Native Americans. And somehow the people from my village gathered into what we thought was a safe place. And my daughter came to me, who was pregnant. I think she was pregnant in my dream. And she told me she was going to run away. And I felt like it wasn't safe. There were these barbarians all over, you know, who could get her. And I was in this state of terror. And then someone realized that all the vodka we had stored in our little village center was half drunk, and we realized that the Native Americans were right where we were, hiding. And in my dream, it was just this pure terror, layer after layer of terror. And I've been sitting with that dream as a koan. I have no idea where I came from. But I had this glimmer this morning that last night I said, oh, you know, identity action is a piece of cake for me, you know, being one with all beings. And I realized that I did not account for that contracted place, which does arise. You know, think about that. So that's what I'm sitting with. This thing, I kind of have amnesia about the hard times, and I like to remember the yummy times. But my dream, my sort of inner Zen teacher arose and said, you gotta look at that too. So I just wanted to say that thing was sitting
there. Thank you. Now we've all had the dream.
And I have a pretty strong association to that dream based on the events of last week. You know, we've been talking about this quite a bit here at the Angha, how we tend to separate from the perpetrators of the violence, you know, and only go for the yummy stuff, you know, or and then of course that generalizes, we separate from the contracted place, as you say, and to realize that everything is the Buddha nature, that there's really nothing outside of it, means that we have to welcome everything. So that includes our anger, our frustration, our fear, our great terror. And, and so my association was to that young man who helped to set the bombs. I saw his photograph on the warnings, that the city of Boston sent out. And he was hiding in a boat in somebody's backyard, terrified. He was the one who had made everyone else terrified. But he was hiding in a little boat in somebody's backyard. I really get that. And all these people were searching for him with their big guns and their riot helmets, and he's hiding in a boat. Somehow hiding in a boat really caught me. So here we are, there's parts of ourself that are separate, hiding in a little boat. And we don't have to come with our machine guns, and we can turn the boat over and say, you too.
A part of what I've been dealing with this morning is holding, on the one hand, my cognitive information about Native Americans and having total empathy. Mm-hmm. Of course they wanted to kill these guys, And sort of like trying to hold that in the terror and still trying to find this place where I can turn it around, similar to that guy in the boat bleeding. Mm-hmm. Deep compassion. Deep wondering, why? But it's still stuck for me. To open that.
Right? Well, and just to go back to Diane's talk, you don't have to do that.
Yeah.
You don't have to turn it over.
Oh, thank God. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It'll self-release through the practice.
It's uncomfortable in the meantime.
I read just a few of the particulars about this young man. Mm-hmm. And, from what I read, he was a very ordinary young man. Went to a good school, had many friends, was captain of his wrestling team. So, someone who could be your son or your child's friend. And then, which I think just makes it all the more apparent that what, is part of all of us, is he wasn't some kind of defective human being, where that went. It's here for all of us. So.
Something early on, that you said, Melissa, about bearing witness, existing to witness. And I really feel like the events of this week have kind of really pushed that home for me, just being here to witness everything that had happened and having that happen while I'm coming in and out of this space, witnessing the turmoil and the things that go on in myself, and then moving out in the larger world, kind of honed with that consciousness and bearing witness to the events in the larger world, and sort of holding space for these things to happen within myself. It's been rather interesting, rather intense.
Yeah, and this practice of going back and forth from the Zendo to the world is, of course, our practice, for all of us. And some opportunity here in the Anga where it's a little bit more vivid, where the container's a little bigger, and we see, actually someone was saying, someone said that she was beginning to, this person would go out in the world and wish they were back here in the Zendo. And then she began to see that actually no difference.
Right.
What happens out there, the heart arises, the contraction happens, the opening happens, same identity, action of sitting in the Zendo and living our life.
I've also found it really rich when the people from the outside come in, because we're, kind of out of it here. And then they bring in their energy and their spirit and just sort of like a sense of, okay, well, we're still in the world. Here come our friends, reminding us, that this is all real, you know, it's all makes it, gets it real for us, yeah.
Yeah, something so rich about that for, you know, someone who's been here the whole time, this coming in and coming out is just kind of mysteriously rich. And you know, so on our retreats, our sesshin, we have a closed system. But here, this open system, I feel so important for everybody.
Better.
Yeah, I would say. And I think it feels... Yeah, it's not better.
It was Diane.
Yeah, just honoring these different kinds of, different forms of practice.
So, I think for me, the difficulty that I have about things coming forward and practicing with me is that I have such strong preferences as to what I want to have come forward. You know, I'm fine with bells and flowers.
Yeah, I should have used a different example in there too. Should have put like the rattlesnake in the pack.
Those are really cool. Yeah. And I go out and I feel like in one of these talks or discussions or something, my heart opens up a little bit, and we go outside and walk in the garden, and all the flowers are just popping, and it's really nice. And I go, it should always be like this. A flower should come forward. the birds are singing, that's really cool. And then I go back to the Zendo and I got all this feelings of I don't even know what, but I can interpret most anything, any emotion that comes up, I can interpret as this idea that I am lacking in something, and I just so desperately don't want that to come forward and be with me, I think that in itself is it's just like a huge block to letting anything else forward. I was noticing, like the difference between, so that experience I was talking about of having my heart open and going and walking in the garden, and other times when I've got my head fully engaged in how, I know there's something wrong, there's something wrong here and I don't get it, and I go out in the garden and I walk and I go, oh yeah, well that's that same flower, but I am really busy right now trying to figure out what the heck is wrong with me, and I just don't, I can see that there's a flower there, but I just can't really take the time to deal with it because I'm so caught up in this really important work of figuring out what the heck is wrong with me, And it's kind of like a model for my life, I spend so much, time and energy caught up in these ideas of separation and deficiency and not being able to figure my way out, and it just is such a barrier in my mind every once in a while I'm able to sit in Zendo and just, I've really been trying to focus on not resisting, this stuff that comes up and really, feeling the energy and seeing the thoughts and how they're bringing up all this energy and they get going and going and that while all that is, going on, to just to be with that rather than pushing it away, these things come and go, like Bob was saying, you carry that out into the kitchen and wash the hell out of some pots and pans, and it dissipates, and then we move on, I can notice these things, but I get so stuck, and I go, why don't the flowers come forward? I don't know.
you're not alone. I don't walk around seeing flowers everywhere either. Yeah, so.
Yeah, I know, I'm just so thankful to be able to get to go through that process in a safe space, you know, to have it, in, so I can watch it happen, so I can be in a place where it's allowed. I'm allowed to do that. You know, it's not marring my life or hindering me in some way, shape, or form. I can just experience that. But like, okay, I'm going into a dark place right now. This is what I'm experiencing.
Yeah.
And just so thankful that be able to do that safely.
Mm.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. A reassurance. I'm very touched by what you're saying, Abe. The reassurance that you're not in a space. I find it safe. I'm not sure what you mean by safe, but I find it safe. Because nobody's going to try to fix me.
Yeah, everybody. I know everybody is going through something similar.
Yeah.
You know, everybody's going to have to process their crap today. Like, it's
that's
just
right.
What it comes up, it happens.
Yeah. But, you know, nobody's going to rush up to you and say, oh, Abe, you seem a little depressed.
Yeah.
Are you okay? Can I do anything for you? You can just actually feel it and see what Steve was pointing to,
right.
Just this natural evolution of it, it comes and goes.
And Steve, I'm so thankful for your honesty and you know, the fact that you say it, because it really is. I mean, it's a huge part of doing this. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much.
A long time ago, Melissa, you said to me that I don't have to be any certain way here. It was so touching. I still always feel touched by it, because it's what you're saying, Abe, you know, it's a safe place, and all those rules are gone, so.
Well, and then in this identity action, seeing the fullness of our life, appreciating no certain form, and beginning to see, as we're saying, all of the judgments we have. Well, I like this certain form, don't like this one, and most of our life, I think, we grow up thinking, all right, my job is sorting and getting more of some and less of the other. I mean, that's what we're taught. And, you know, it's nice to get food when you're hungry and drink when you're thirsty, but there's some broader calling to us that is both, you know, for all of us here, incredibly enticing and terrifying. You know, exactly, we have to go through exactly what we don't want. But this identity action, practicing in whatever form of myself arises, me as the terrorized young man with the whole world against me, you know, me as the father whose daughter is about to run off into the danger and the vodka's gone. I think all of us, we see all these many, many, many selves. I am many, you know, certainly not one distinct, but we get to be whoever we are. And I believe this identity action is the Bodhisattva vow. I think this is saving all beings. So saving the being who is irritated and sure something is missing. How do we not close our heart to that one, or to the one who's contracted for the 50 millionth time and, you know, is just fed up with everything? How do we save that being? I was, you got me with the clam chowder. on the rocks, yeah. I'm just like, oh, so, you know how it's creamy and a little salty.
So you had an expanded experience.
I did. I had contact time here. But I think so important. I so appreciate us not imagining that we are special because we're practicing Zen,
mm-hmm.
or that there's some experience. And I think so many people, when they encounter Zen, really hurt themselves by imagining. And we're talking about it with, I think, a little bit with George, you know, who speaks so wonderfully and has such clarity sometimes and can imagine that he's talking about something that we don't know. Or imagine, you know, I love that. Well, Dogen, my God, you know, he must be talking about something. And you know, but coming back to that just human experience, not even necessary to meditate for 30 years. You know, just to taste the clam chowder on the rocks, and, mm-hmm. or, you know, when a little child comes up and hugs you just because they want to hug you, you know, those are, that's it, that, not something else.
Yeah, I really appreciated you bringing that up, Diane, because it really is clear to me that I did know that as a child. Like, I would go out at the beach and you know, lie down and close my eyes and listen to the surf and just lose myself in the surf. And it was such a wonderful experience. And I was doing this when I was, like, you know, 8, 10 years old. And I just, you know, just really just becoming one with the sound of the ocean. And just, you know, whew. And I you know, we do know this. You know, walk in the woods, you know, whatever. That's great, a great point, you know, what we do, particularly maybe as children, but other times as well, you know, and I think we probably all know that.
Yeah, sometimes I think, you know, I have these memories of things that have no significance, really, you know, but they just stick with me, and I think that really, what they're saying is, you know, this was when your heart responded to the universe, you know, and it's easy to, like, make up stories about it, you know, have the mind come rushing in, but it's just a little tenderness that stays with us, you know, that, oh yeah, you know, I remember, you know, it's always like, oh yeah, yeah.
Thank you.